Radio Ornia from La Bañeza. The geographical and historical program for our listeners. Today in our program, we are going to talk about geography and history. We will speak about geography with the partners from the third course, and we will speak about history with the partners from the fourth. Firstly, we have an interview with the mayor of Salamanca, Magali, that she is going to answer some questions that our partner Sergio has done. Then, we are going to have with us another group that we will talk about the most interesting things in Castilla and León. For example, they will speak about the culture, about the geography, about the gastronomy, about the cities that we can to visit.
Hello, good morning to all listeners. Today we are one more day on ES Ornia Radio, and today we bring you a very special guest, Magali, the mayor of Salamanca.
Hi.
Well, we have brought you here to do an interview.
Wow, what a surprise.
Let us begin.
All right.
The first question asked by many of the listeners is where Salamanca is located.
Well, Salamanca is located in the northwest of Spain.
Oh, it's close to me.
Let's see if you visit us.
Next question. For example, what type of climate is there on average?
Well, in Salamanca, there is usually a temperature between 3 and 9 degrees in winter, 5 and 18 degrees in spring, 21 and 23 degrees in summer, and 10 and 17 degrees in autumn.
How cold now winter is coming?
You don't even imagine.
As for gastronomy, what is the typical food of the area and where could they be?
The five typical food of Salamanca are ornato salmantino, zafaira, patatas revolconas, and boiled maimon, like others. And you can try them in various restaurants, such as Restaurant en la Parra, Restaurant Isidro, and the Maison Gonzalo.
My mouth is watering.
If you want, I invite you.
No, thanks. Next question. What are the activities that abound in each sector?
In the primary sector, there are livestock and farming. In the secondary sector, industries carbon or plastic manufacturing industry. In the third sector, tourism, transport, and radio.
It seems that nobody is unemployed. We are already in the last questions.
Oh, what am I having fun?
As for a tourist level, what kind of things can we visit? And if there is a river in the area?
The main tourist attractions are La Plaza Mayor, the University, the Cathedral, the Casa de las Conchas, el Huerto de Calixto y Melibea, the Clerecía, Palacio de la Salina, y de San Esteban Boal, the Roman Bridge, the San Esteban Convent, and the Museum Casa de Luis. The river that passes through Salamanca is the Provost.
Interesting. And finally, and the question most asked by our listeners, is what is the history of Salamanca?
The history of Salamanca has its origin in a village located on the hill of San Vicente on the River Tormes. This happened about 2,700 years ago during the First Iron Age, and since then the palace has witnessed the passage of Basins, Bretons, Romans, Visigoths, and Muslims. The medieval repopulation was carried out by Raimundo de Borgoña, son in law of King Alfonso VI, who laid the foundations of a city that after 8 centuries accumulating art and wisdom has become, thanks above all, the its university character, one of the capital with the greatest cultural tradition and monumental splendor of the entire European continent.
Wow, incredible! And with this question, we finish the program. Thank you very much, Magali.
Thank you.
And now we go to a first sitting until the next day. Bye!
Thanks, Magali, and thanks, Sergio, for your intervention.
Hi Jackson, I've been thinking about the idea of collaborating, and I would love it, but I'm afraid I don't have enough money.
Oh, Edison, don't worry, you don't need any money.
What do you mean? Are you saying I can do something good for the community without spending money?
Of course you can. We can donate blood and save lives.
Yeah, that's great. Let's do it.
You can save someone's life without spending a cent. If you want to learn more about donating blood, contact the blood service at 13 14 95 or visit donateblood.com. Just with your blood, you can save a lot of lives.
Okay, now we have speak with the other groups. It's the partners from La Bañeza. We have speak about Castilla y León. Come on, guys.
Hello, my name is Hector, and today I speak about the Castilla y León and Argentina. Castilla y León has 9 provinces: Ávila, Burgos, León, Valencia, Salamanca, Segovia, Soria, Valladolid, and Zamora. In that province, we have a very mixed climate. The climate is Mediterranean continental. In winter, it's usually rain or snowing. The degrees are between 4 and 7 degrees. But in summer, the temperatures are between 19 and 26 degrees. It is normally a sunny night, but sometimes a stormy and rainy. And now I leave you with our partner, Ricardo.
Hello, my name is Ricardo, and I'm going to talk about history, culture, and rivers in Castilla and León. First, I'm going to start with the history. Burgos have rest of the Homo and Tethys. In León, the medullas are so beautiful. The Romans used this stone to obtain gold. In Segovia, there is an aqueduct. It's a good site to go holiday. There are Roman bridges in Hospital de Órbigo and in Soria. The most important cathedral is situated in León. The Christian Week and Carnivals were the two most popular parties. Now is the turn of the rivers. The most important river is the Duero of Castilla and León. This river has 3 affluents: the Riaza, the Durato, and the Ebro. And now I leave you with our partner, Irene.
Hello, my name is Irene, and I'm going to talk about the economy and astronomy of Castilla and León. The economy is based on the tertiary sector, that is, shops and restaurants. It's 80% approximately. The second sector is the industry, for example, Renault. This sector is occupied 15%, and the third sector is the primary sector. The sector occupies 3%. And now I will talk about the gastronomy in Castilla and León. I start by Ávila. The most important food are meat and vegetables. In Burgos, it's typical the morcilla. In Palencia, the lechazo. In Segovia, the pig. In Valladolid, the garlic soup. In Zamora, it's important food, the rice. And to finish with a dessert, what is better than the Salamanca and León rosquilla? This is the finish of our presentation of Castilla and León.
Okay, thank you guys.
Today, in our program of history, firstly, we have with us an historian that explains us the Spanish Succession War. Secondly, some people will speak about their legitimate ideas, when the Sociedades Económicas de Amigos del País was developed in Spain. Finally, another group is going to talk about the different customs during the ancient regime. Our listeners can to listen different interview to some historical people from the history. For example, we can to listen Jovellanos and we can to listen Marie Antoinette. Now we have to listen them.
The North Pole is melting down due to the global warming. With it, a lot of animals are dying every day. Polar bears, seals, and penguins need our help. Send North Pole to the 66543 and you donate 1.20 euros for the investigation to save them. You can also visit our web www.thenorthpoleneedsourhelp.org to see our advantages.
I'm going to talk about the Spanish War of Succession. This war started in 1701 in cause of the death of Carlos II, the king of Spain that belongs to the Habsburg dynasty. His reign started in 1665 and finishes with his death in the 17th. He has abdicated in Philip of Anjou, that is a Bourbon, and he has the right to abdicate in someone of his same dynasty. The war was fought between the Habsburg in hands of Archduke Carlos of Austria and the Bourbons, whose leader was Philip of Anjou. The Iberian Peninsula was divided into two bands because the Crown of Aragon supported Carlos of Austria and the Crown of Castilla supported Philip of Anjou. Besides the Crown of Aragon, there were too many European countries that supported Carlos of Austria, like France, Naples, Netherlands, Duchy of Milan, Bavaria, Sardinia, and Sicily. The same happened with the Crown of Castilla. Some countries and some European islands supported Philip of Anjou, like Portugal, Crown of Aragon, Great Britain, United Provinces, Austria, Hungary, Prussia, part of the Holy Roman Empire, and Savoy. The war finishes in 1713, that's thanks to the treaties of Utrecht and Rastatt. This treaty was established in 1713, but until 1715 had become that they didn't finish putting in all the new rules. Two of the main reasons to the creation of these treaties was the division of lands and the decision of the successor of Carlos II. Finally, Philip of Anjou occupied the throne of Spain and he started to name Felipe the Fifth. With his reign, the Bourbon dynasty was established in Spain, in exception of some periods like Napoleonic occupation, Revolutionary Sexenium, the Second Republic, and Franco's dictatorship.
Okay, thanks, Iker. And what conclusion is possible to do in this conflict?
In conclusion, the War of Spanish Succession started in 1701, after the death of Carlos II. It was a war that faced the Bourbons against the Habsburg and lasted about 13 years. In 1713, finishes thanks to the treaties of Austerlitz and Rastatt, and the winner was Felipe V, that became King of Spain.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Iker. Okay, now we have to travel to the past.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Radio Ornia, your favorite radio program. We are broadcasting from the Salon IES Ornia, where you can meet us. Now, you are listening to our new podcast, Light Interviews. The topic we are going to introduce now talks about the different thinking ideas that are emerging right now. Maybe you have heard about them, but if it's not the case, we are explaining to you what the Enlightenment consists of. The Enlightenment is an important intellectual movement and a new way of thinking that is developing at this moment, the 18th century, in our continent. You could think Enlightenment is about putting more bulbs in your house, but I'm sorry to tell you that is not the idea. This trend wants to spread knowledge by learning and teaching it. Enlightenment thinkers agree that equality and liberty must be before the law. And they also think reason is the only valid source of knowledge. I mean, it's against irrational beliefs and dogma. How did this movement get to Spain, may you ask? Well, it's easy to explain. The Enlightenment emerged and developed in France as a result of the bourgeoisie's protest. They weren't in favor of absolute monarchy and wanted the first and second estates to pay taxes as well. Finally, some Spanish thinkers and politicians brought these ideas from France to our Spain. The ideas are nowadays rapidly spread through academies, salons, newspapers, and they are all written down in the encyclopedia, which was created by D'Alembert and Diderot. We are pleased to have here with us Jovellanos and Conde de Florida Blanca, some of the most important characters referring to the spreading of the Enlightenment ideas in our country. Let's talk with them.
Thank you, Geneva. As you said, today we got our guest, the legendary Jovellanos and the Count of Florida Blanca. Good morning, my Spanish friends.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Hello, my good friend. I didn't expect to see my dear old friend Jovellanos.
Okay, the first question, because we don't have all the day. Where did you promote the Enlightenment ideas?
We wanted to promote it because we wanted to reserve the decline that began with the lesser fascism.
Also because we wanted to spread knowledge to the people.
And what did you study?
I got a doctorate in law at the University of Salamanca and later became a lawyer with my father. Thanks to this, I had contact with influential figures who facilitated my entry into the Council of Castile. I acted forcefully against the instigators of the Serbian mutiny in Cuenca. Those bastards deserve it.
Yes, they deserve it.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, in this podcast, everyone is respected. Stop saying these bad words.
Okay. Continuing with what I was saying, I also collaborated in the expulsion of Jesuits from the territories of the Spanish Crown in 1772. I was appointed plenipotentiary ambassador to the Holy See, where I influenced Clement XIV to obtain the definitive dissolution of the Company of Jesus. I also broke free Menorca and Florida, and that's how I became the Count of Florida Blanca.
Very interesting. And what about you, Jovellanos?
I graduated in administration and canons from the University of Oviedo at 21 years old. After that, I moved to Seville to be mayor of crime. In 1787, I presented my first book.
And how was it work at the box office?
I worked very well. I heard that despite the girls to make El Presentado. In Madrid, I entered the Campomanes discussion, which distinguished me as a man of extensive training and recognize absolvency in the economic field. In 1780, I accessed to the Council of Military Orders. 2 years after, I created the Bank of San Carlos. I was also a member and director of the Sociedad Económica Madridense.
Yes, I was there too.
It's true.
Oh, perfect. Let's talk about the Sociedad Económica Madridense.
It was founded in 1775 by Carlos III.
We did too many things. We conferred and produced memories to improve the popular industry, the secrets of the art, the machines to facilitate the jobs, and help teaching the society.
I have to say that it quickly became a role model of Enlightenment politics and was a powerful instrument to spread the ideology.
Yeah, we had a lot of competition in industry, commerce, and patents. They made us review the union ordinances and patent privileges.
I heard you have to ask help from the nobles to improve that social transformation. How was it?
The king needed the nobles to improve the social transformation, and the nobles needed the king, so they decided to make certain reforms in the state, especially in education.
Changing of topic, what have you heard about the Sociedad Económica de Benavente?
I think they got inspired by one of Zamora.
Yes, I heard something like that, but I think they didn't last too much time.
I have heard that it disappeared during the beginning of the Independence War.
But they did too many good things for the people.
And they also copied our statutes. Don't forget that.
Well, they were copying the Gaitos, man. Am I right?
Obviously, my dear friend.
Did you meet the Caballeritos there at Coit?
Yes, I met them once. They were from Guipúzcoa, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
They created one of the Sociedades Económicas de Amigos del País. In fact, I was one of the politicians who supported the project.
Jovellanos, did you meet them?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I thought you did.
But I heard they did a very good job with the Sociedad Económica Guipuzcoana.
I don't know if you were aware of that, but in Guatemala there is also a Sociedad Económica de Amigos.
What? I didn't know.
Yes, it was approved by the king in 1795. It's official.
I didn't expect that.
And what was the most important thing you did for the Enlightenment?
I created a high school to teach my pupils the Enlightenment ideas, and I wrote several studies of the economy of Spain, such as the report on the agrarian law, in which I advocate for the liberation of land, a rule on which the Council of Castile turned its hopes to reform and modernize the peninsular agriculture.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
Well, I'm saying that the time is running out, so I think that's all. But before we finish, just one last question. What do you think about the interview? Do you think you could repeat and come again soon?
Of course, this has been so fun.
I think we could come here another day.
That's perfect. And that, thank you for your time. Well, now I pass the word to my partner, Claudia. Bye!
Thank you, Marcos. Bringing up rear, these changes are creating new problems like more riots, and this is just the beginning. On the other hand, thanks to this, we are living an economic growth, and technological as well as scientific advances are taking place. This is leading to an improvement in trade, health, hygiene, and is helping us with the task of abolishing absolute monarchy. From here, we have to say thank you. Thank you, Sociedades Económicas y Amigos del País, for the role you are actually playing in our country and for spreading the new way of thinking. With your labor, you are trying to make a better society, and we are placed for this. Also, thank you, Jovellanos and Conde de Florida Blanca, for coming here and explain to us how the enlightenment is developing in Spain. Again, thanks for telling us more information about those sociedades económicas, mainly the Madridense one. We hope these ideas continue spreading around the nation and likely establish as the new principal basis of our political and economic society, and in the end, making everybody equal before the law. And what is your opinion about those ideas? Do you agree with them, or would you change something? Thank you for listening to us, and don't miss our next podcast.
Do you want a pet, but also doing a good action? In LPMSM Rescue Center, we love animals, and we don't want them to stay alone. So we try to find you the best friend for you. Come and let us a try. It will be for day.
Hello everyone. Today we are going to talk with some celebrities about the mob and the parties in 17th and 18th century. Here we have Marie Antoinette, Carlos III, Mary Astell and Leonard Otti. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mainly I'm going to talk with Leonard Otti. Hello.
Hi.
Who are you?
Hi, Jose, I'm Leonard Otti. I am famous in France because I am the favorite hairdresser of the Queen Marie Antonietta.
What was the famous garment?
The famous clothing consisted of the verdugado, on which the silhouettes that precede the guarda infante were made. This was a crossing between the Spanish verdugado and the 16th century and the French or Flemish verdugado of cylindrical volume.
Where did the guarda infante come from?
The guarda infante was imported from France, since in some paintings, Maria de Medici is seen wearing a verdugado whose voluntary matches with the Spanish guarda infante. Paintings that were made long before this garment was fashionable in Spain.
What was the guarda infante style?
The style was of a French model that consisted of a wicker platform at the height of the hips, but the Spanish woman turned it into a complicated fairwork made with wooden. The guarda infante dressed in various enaguas, and over it is put the pollera, an inner skirt made with rich fabrics of brick colors and sometimes paired with wool to round the hips, on top of which was placed the outer skirt called basquiña.
What series of changes were implemented in this time?
The first one was the neckline, which was wider and exposed much of the neck, and in some occasions also revealed the shoulders. Other important change was the shoes. During this time, female feet were more striking for men, especially the small and sandy feet, which were chapines. They were a kind of very high flip-flops with wooden soles and lined with cordovan, raw fabric of tanned goatskin. This type of line served one objective, to protect the shoes from the mud and the dirt of the street. Also, the hairstyle changed. The typical collected hairstyle was no longer used, but the hair was realized and dropped in braids or ringlets on the back.
Like a curiosity, what other styles apart from the guarda infante were used during this time?
The cotilla, that was made with ballenas, this was dressed over the female inner shirt, and on this the jubón, which was a tight garment with or without sleeves, that covered the trunk of the body up to the waist. Other style was the saya, that was a court suit made of a fairly long and close piece of fabric, in which the only element that varied were the sleeves, which could be of three types, casaca sleeves, round sleeves, and pointing sleeves. And finally, a new style emerged at the end of the 18th century, that was the sacristán and the tontillo. At the beginning of the reign of Carlos II, the guarda infante was restricted at guard, and was replaced by the sacristán. And at the end of the century, this was by the tontillo.
But now, we are going to talk about the 18th century with Marie Antoinette, the queen consort of France and Navarre. Good morning.
Good morning.
What can you say about you?
That I'm married to Louis XVI of France.
What are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about female fashion in 18th century.
And what was the most important thing in 18th century?
The most important thing in 18th century was the pragmatic sanction of 1723, in which some aspects were prohibited.
And what type of things or clothes were forbidden?
Luxury articles of clothing, and especially those that came from the foreign. And also, it was forbidden to wear silk dresses to tailors, barbers, carpenters. They could only wear wool dresses.
And what did government think about the luxury?
Government tried to regulate luxury and stop the entry of foreign products. Therefore, in 1788, a national costume was created. This initiative was general throughout Europe. During my time, the Middle Ages, a great controversy took place between those who considered luxury and fashion, and immorality against enlightened thinkers who wanted to promote industry and commerce. Clothes should be the same for all the ladies, but different types of dresses according to the social class.
What happened after the French Revolution? Did you wear the same clothes?
In 1789, the French Revolution ended with the Asian regime and allowed dress freely. I remember that Spain had a very famous suit that the painter Goya represented in his painting. It was known as the Maja suit. The Spanish women rejected wigs and wore skirts that did not cover ankles, and shone with bright colors.
What type of dresses do we wear just now?
Now, in Europe, the dresses that we can wear are of two styles, a la española and a la francesa. The French dresses are the ones that wear here in France, with the Rococo style. They are dresses with a ruffles, loose and comfortable. In Spain, with the reign of Carlos III, they have become very famous. We also wear seats decorated with Moorish motifs, with embroidery made with gold, silver or silk.
What can you tell us about the footwear?
As a footwear, we use chapines that are made of cord and leather. They are fastened with ribbons on the instep and be decorated with gold or silver tags. This footwear is succeeding in Venice. And that's all that I can say about the fashion of my time.
Oh, that's right. Now we are going to talk with Carlos III about the main costume. Hello.
Hi.
Who are you?
I'm Carlos III, King of Spain.
What do you know about last century?
In the 16th century, they used the jubon dressed over the inner shirt, the garment dressed over the jubon, and the calzones, which were longer and narrower. This suit was complemented with medias de punto, shoes, and a cape was placed on top. To know ferrule. And finally, the neck collar, which consists a cardboard support lined in black silk on which a neck rested, which called valor. Years later, the jacket was incorporated, whose sleeves were adorned with luxurious ruffles and lace.
What do you know about the costumes in 17th century?
In the middle of the 17th century, this costume developed transformation amongst which the substitution of the neck collar for the pañuelo and the tie could be appraised, which went hand in hand with length of hair and the use of wind. Another element that was affected by the change was the calzas, which became pants.
What can you say about the footwear?
As for footwear, the men used the boots, which were made of fine leather, very flexible, and were ajusted by means of buttons, which sometimes went a little higher than the height, than the feet.
What happened in 1623 and in 1625 to 1650?
In 1623, during the reign of the Felipe IV, were replaced the calzones as known as agrehuescos. These were simple and functional pants that came from the military suit. In 1625 to 1650, the male costume consists of a montera, long hair, which had long hair at the shoulders, and blue teeth that was a short cape in 16th century. and was lengthened in 17th century, rough with or without sleeves, jubon, trenches, socks, and shoes or boots.
What do you know about the long suit?
The long suit during this century, intellectuals or men of letters or size wore knitted anthropomorphic garments, such as sotanas and garachas, which evidenced their spiritual distance from men and arms or corpus.
What can you tell us about the 18th century?
During this century, the cloth remained similar to the last century. In terms of materials and fabrics, they are still rich enough, but the loose, simple lines of early suit have given birth to a new idea of understanding the culture.
This is so suggestive. The last one is Mary Astor, an English feminist writer. Hello.
Good morning.
How did the lower class men have fun?
The fun methods of the lower class men were to gather and drink poor quality alcohol and enjoy with special ladies. They did this very occasionally because their economy didn't allow them anymore. Women in this class didn't enjoy any parties and stayed at home taking care of the children.
How were the nobility parties?
The parties of the nobility were the most numerous. There was never a lack of alcohol and there were great feasts with enormous quantities of food of all kinds. There were dances where many nobles tried to find a husband or a wife.
Did drugs exist in these parties?
Yes, of course. We used drugs back then. The favorite of the time was cocaine brought from America. As we had no knowledge of the doses or the effects they caused to the organism, there were some deaths.
How long were these parties?
They used to long 1 or 2 days. Also, the most important ones could be extended up to 15 days.
What can you say about clergy festivities?
They were more serious. Most were for the worship of God, but there were also other special addresses to the nobles, such as baptism, weddings, or proclamation of new kings. These parties were beyond the reach of the peasants.
And what do you know about the music in them?
A very important factor in all three levels was music. At that time, classicism, the main characteristics were balance, proportion, and rationality. The symphony was born and small groups like the string quartet, very famous among us. The Bourbons established Italian music at court. In the festivities of the church, songs were made and the peasants had their profane music.
Oh, that has turned. It could be fun. Well, with those important things, we finish our interview. I wish you liked it and see you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Radio Ornia from La Bañeza, the geographical and historical program for our listeners.